Okay, so I'm going to talk about our interprofessional community-based rural track program at East Tennessee State University. And Carter Florence is an MPH student, and she's going to also help me. And I have no relationships. I guess that's financial relationships to disclose. And just to let you know where Northeast Tennessee is, we're on the border of North Carolina and Virginia, and then to the north, Kentucky. And we're much further east than Knoxville. And we always say the state does not end at Knoxville. We often feel that way. And we're in Appalachia, so it's beautiful. This study was done last fall, and I was sort of approached to do this study to sort of look at the process outcomes from our program since 2005. And through that, I interviewed faculty, like five faculty, to find out, you know, what's it like to teach this course? And I'm going to talk about that. And then we also looked at some of the student evaluations to kind of connect all that. So looking at some of the process outcomes, we're in seven counties, and that map showed them in the area. We've been in seven counties, and since 2005, 42 projects have been implemented, and there'll be seven more this semester, so that'll bring up the number. And just to give you some idea what some of the projects are, students have done a clinic video for pregnant women. They've done school-based education on benefits of breastfeeding. We've done community diabetes screenings. Also educational dinners in the communities on diabetes, related to diabetes and nutrition, cancer prevention screenings, physician education programs on migrant occupational hazards, health literacy. I mean, the gamut, you know, some of the most important issues that come up. And I forgot to say that this is a two-semester program. So in the first semester, which is usually the spring, students do, they kind of get in the community. It's interprofessional. It started out with nursing, public health, and medicine in 1992 through a Kellogg grant. So those players kind of really learned how to do interdisciplinary. And now we're now calling it interprofessional, and now I like transdisciplinary. Yeah, that's a new term. I like that. So they kind of worked out, you know, they've been working together, and we've been working together for a while, and now since 2005, the Kellogg money has sort of dwindled, and now we decided to go into more counties and also invite more faculty in. So we now have psychology. We've had social work. They're not involved right now, but they have been in the past, and then respiratory therapy, and we're always trying to get more faculty from, you know, different, and pharmacy has also been involved. So it's a two-semester program. They're out in the community. They're getting to know the players in the community and what are the issues, doing some types of assessments, surveys, Voter Voice has been done, lots of focus groups, stakeholder interviews in the first semester, and they start to get an idea of what they might want to do in the next semester as in the fall for a project. So the fall is really a little bit of more planning, learning about evaluation, and doing some kind of a project, and then they present on that. I think, yeah, that's the interprofessional, and that's the community-based, and they are primarily out, we are out in the community. So I talked to you a little bit about the projects. As far as the organizations that we've been involved in, we were able to count 13 different types, and that includes school boards, health councils, neighborhood associations, senior center groups, rural clinics, community-based clinics, hospital, church organizations, migrant farm camps. I mean, there's quite a list there. And then thinking about the primary populations, we've been involved with at least eight, and pregnant women, adults, rural white, which is predominantly our areas, but also there are small African American communities that we've worked with, and Hispanic population. And also adults managing diabetes. We've worked with children, senior citizens groups, adolescent groups, and also veterans. Some of the topics, we've been able to count 15 different topics, but often groups will focus on that same topic for many years, or also will have several sections on the same topic. And some of the topics, of course, I've mentioned them are smoking cessation, smoking prevention, breastfeeding, diabetes prevention, disaster preparedness, pandemic flu, cancer, interpreter services for Hispanic population, environmental and occupational issues related to migrant populations, school-based immunizations, and memory loss and aging. That's not all, but just to give you an idea. And then we've been in at least 9 different community settings, and you probably get an idea what some of those are, but clinics, schools, churches, health fairs, businesses, flea markets that we've done, you know, projects at. And Carter is going to talk to you about the section that she's been involved in this last year to give you sort of a case study of what's it like to be in a group.
Thank you, Dr. Littleton. As she said, this did start in the spring, but the program that I have been involved in actually started in 2008 with a TIPS grant, which was given by the state of Tennessee to a medical researcher to help women stop smoking, pregnant women stop smoking. So we actually were invited into Carter County by the Coordinated School Health, I believe, which is one of those 7 counties. And we went in there and started working with them to see if we could stop their pregnant women from smoking, because it's a huge problem. And we found some really good information, but it turned out that Hawkins County really wanted us. So in 2009, we went to Hawkins County into the high school to work with the teenage population who were pregnant and smoking. And what we found from there was that high school's too late. You can't start a tobacco intervention from high school. And we didn't know this as practitioners. We found this out by talking to our community members, by talking to these high school women who were pregnant and smoking and would say, you know, well, I'll stop smoking while I'm breastfeeding, but, you know, as soon as I'm done putting, I'm going to put the baby down, I'm going to go get a cigarette. Because there were so many other factors coming into these women's lives. So the next semester, we went into the middle school. We did what they asked for us, and we started a middle school intervention and had a really good experience there. But we wanted to expand it because we found that tobacco is a really hard topic to do in Eastern Tennessee. A lot of people smoke, and it's a really hard behavior to change. So we wanted to see if we could affect something differently that would later down the road affect that tobacco behavior. So we actually brought in the focus to what we call risky youth behaviors, and we went into an alternative high school. So these are students who had been pulled out of their regular high school for violence or behavioral abuse, drug use. Often it was drug use or substance abuse. And so we went into that school and worked in that population, and unfortunately we lost our key stakeholder. Our principal left that school and left that environment. And so while we felt we could probably stay there, we had really lost our connection to the community, which makes this interprofessional class so unique. So we had actually been talking to Carter County, where it had all started, and we ended up back there, and now we are taking the information that we've learned since 2008 and incorporating it in. We didn't go into a high school. We asked Coordinated School Health which middle school would best like us to come in and help them, and we found this phenomenal health professor who's the coach of the football team, and he's been a phenomenal stakeholder to work with. And so instead of focusing on tobacco, we talked to them and found out that they are so stressed out that it's no wonder they're smoking. So now we're trying to reduce their stress by teaching them healthy stress techniques, which include deep breathing exercises, yoga, and progressive tension relaxation techniques. And this is stuff we're actively doing with the kids. And again, this is just one of the 7 that is going on right now.
Yeah, so you get an idea with what's what happens through time. And then when looking at the faculty interviews, some interesting things came out. And you know, when I asked like 10 questions, but these are the main things I'm going to present today. Okay. So, so the main reason for being involved is the faculty are very committed to interprofessional education. They think that's where education should be and where it's going, and they like being around other people from different professions. They feel like they learn a lot. And then they also have a real commitment to community-based participatory research. And it, another great thing about this, it gives faculty the opportunity to get in community and work, learn who's out there, and also, you know, do some research. If it gives them some links to research. So it really has a win-win for faculty for research, service, and teaching. You know, all three happen through this course. And one faculty has said, this is my sacred time. You know, I have this one day where I'm out in the community, and we'll talk a little, and we don't have much time. So as far as some of the things I learned about the teaching strategies, because, of course, we're coming up with how do you teach interprofessionally. So just a few things is that the students are really learning from the instructors modeling that interprofessional dialogue, but also they're learning from each other, because often we'll leave them alone and they have to kind of sit there and figure out how are we going to do this thing or think through things. And figure out who the leaders are. It's a big opportunity for leadership development as well. And this whole thing about continue out scanning. Oh, it went away without that. So a lot of reflective learning happens. I think we need more and more time for that. So we don't. I think we could use a lot more time for reflective learning. I'll just move on. You can, you know, email me or whatever if you want to learn more, and then. Going to talk about student
for the student findings, just to very briefly say, it is about getting in the community, and it's about experiencing working with others as a student, as opposed to getting into the workplace and learning how to figure that out. You're given an opportunity when you're all learning, and you can really learn to respect one another, and it's a real-world situation, so it's a really great learning opportunity.
We'll just pick one. There, you know, scheduling, I know everybody's talked about that. Since it's been going since 1992, medicine, nursing, public health have kind of figured out how to do this. I think we've kind of learned it's, you can do it. And it's the way we do it is it's one day, totally committed to that, full day, 7 to 8 times per semester. So we look at everybody's schedule, and that's worked. But it's always a continual thing of figuring it out. And as far as opportunities, you know,
basically for us, this is a mission of both the College of Public Health and East Tennessee State University to get out into the region. We are a regional institution, and we're there to serve our community, and this course does that for us. Thank you all.
All right.
I don't know if the lead presenters at least would like to come up here. You can stay where you're seated, and if you would like to ask questions and learn more. It always feels like we never learn enough, right? So feel free. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Karen Goldman. I'm from LIU, which nobody knows stands for Long Island University. We have a Brooklyn campus on the west side, and we're pretty wet over there right now. So thank you for the comments. Appreciate it. If I could, I have two questions or whatever. What I came here to hear, and I just may be sleeping too much, or not enough, and so I didn't hear, is so which of the competencies do you feel in your programs have addressed, especially as the first, second, and fourth presenter? I was just looking for that, and I didn't hear it, so I need to leave with that. And number two is the role of public health. So I chair the public health program. Every time I get involved with an IPE project, everybody says, well, you just provide the context. You don't have any skills. Mm. You know, we've got the clinicals, we've got physical therapy, occupational therapy, respiratory care, all these clinicians. And I say, okay, so our specialty is health promotion. We do education, advocacy, and communication. That's what our guys do. And nobody knows how to play with it. I mean, I'm in the sandbox, but they're not sharing shovels and either. I don't know what I need to do. So those are my two questions, if that's all right.
Let's hear your first question. I think, Dr. Redkin, would you like to start off?
I don't know how well we've addressed any of them yet. I mean, I think we're moving forward. First, we were just trying to get different professions together to do some of the activities. Now we're trying to be a little more intentional about incorporating the competencies and highlighting those for both the faculty and the students. The communication piece was probably the thing that happened most naturally. We put the students in interprofessional teams. They weren't focused on doing interprofessional activities, they just happened to be working interprofessionally. But they shared a lot of stories with each other about what their experiences were. But we didn't really assess it or measure it anyway. The second one, we tried to measure more what sort of skill building took place. And we found holes in what they were learning in terms of. So we're working on it, I guess, is the answer. But I think it needs to be there from the beginning. You have to plan. We were doing these projects for other reasons, and we wanted to give everybody from different schools a chance to participate. But we weren't planning from the beginning to make these interprofessional activities. And I think that's what we need to do going forward. And with some of these things I showed at the end, that's what we're trying to do. The projects, again, that I'm talking about doing are not designed to be interprofessional education. We're just trying to incorporate that into other things we have been tasked to do.
I feel like I've answered, I can speak a little bit to your second question, which is really what is the value added of public health professionals to sort of the clinical sandbox, as you used that term. And I think it's all of those core functions in public health that we're talking about, and that actually clinicians are not very good at. I can speak to that in social work. In social work, people don't know how to use population-based knowledge. They can't do many of those 10 core functions that public health has to offer. And they need to understand and learn how to move from an exclusive focus on intervention to be able to hold both the population and the person in the same conversation and project and activity.
And certainly focus concretely on the family.
Yeah. And I would say that our program is really a public health curriculum. It is a public health program, so we're bringing medicine and nursing over, and we're all public health professionals, right? We really are. But when I have the trade-off thing, it's sort of convincing everybody of that. And it's mainly the students that you have to convince. We end up having to convince more than the other faculty because we've got senior undergrad nursing students and second-year medicine, and they don't really understand when they're going to do this. And we have to keep telling them, you know, you may be in clinic today, you may be doing outreach, but it's sort of continually getting that message out, especially as the public health person. And I helped develop a lot of the curriculum.
So. Was your question about interprofessional competencies or public health competencies?
No, the interprofessional.
Okay.
And that's sort of a new thing that we're just starting to incorporate that.
But regardless,
get them all on the playground, get everybody in the box, everybody's at least. We're doing something collaboratively. Then phase two, the way you're doing it.
And making sure people understand what you bring as public health professionals. I think that sort of the conversation begins with who we are, what we value, what is our mission in our particular professions. You can't have interprofessional until people have a dialogue and an understanding of what it is that I need to understand what nurses bring. You need to understand what social workers bring. So that, I mean, for me, it's always about beginning with that place of, gee, lawyers look at these issues really differently than social workers.
And the mindset thing is interesting. Because again, if they're doing the training for the preconception, for example, I heard all the clinical stuff, which is great, and it may have been there, and again, I apologize if I didn't pick up on it, but this is what a nurse will do around this. This is what this one will do. Because I find, we do once a semester, we have, we pick a health issue, and we have panels, and everybody says what their role is in it. And we do it for the students, but you should see everybody sitting there going, you do what?
Yeah.
What's your role in stroke? What's your role in asthma? What's your, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Then they see the similarities, then they see the differences. But that's all we're doing now, is just like one show and tell thing.
Yeah.
From a student perspective, by doing it as a student, and doing a project with it as opposed to just hearing what a nurse can bring to the table, hearing what a social worker can do, bring to the table, but actually physically going out into the community and doing it, I've learned much, much more than a book could ever teach me. And I really figured out what a nurse can bring, and that's been a really great gift to have as a master's student. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel much better prepared to go out into the workforce.
One of the big things we found was that a lot of our students volunteered in the free clinic. They were doing clinical rotations. But until we were knocking on people's doors and seeing where they live, our students live on the island. They just don't live in the neighborhoods we were going through. And they drive around them, right? So they were seeing where people live. We were asking questions, who all lives in a house? Very complicated living arrangements. What are the needs? And then the students started to see the range of needs and the range of services that needed to be available to really make a difference. And they saw that they, as a medical student or a nursing student, weren't going to be able to do that alone. So we, at the end of our interview day, we took everybody to Subway because we had to be kind of healthy, right? And they just, we just listened to them talk. We debriefed. And then they could see, well, you do that and we could do this. And but they also saw that the clinical professions weren't going to be able to do everything and that we did need public health and social work and other groups of participants.
Our program is much more interspecialty, with the exception of public health coming into medicine. And I think at a place like UNMC, all the colleges, just by name, you have an idea of what they do. When it comes to public health, it's not intuitive to clinicians most of the time what in the world is public health. And from the standpoint of an obstetrician, gynecologist, or a medicine person, when it comes to maternal child health, which they don't use that word. When I say MCH, they don't, an OBGYN who practices in medicine 100% of the time, if you say MCH, it's, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not the term we necessarily use. And so the first piece, I think we were like you. It wasn't, this is going to be interprofessional. This is IPE, and we're going to create a program with IPE. It was, this is an issue. Preconception care is not happening on our campus. There's a role for everyone. Depending on your specialty, basically how you run your 15 to 20 minute session is up to you, as long as you're following best practices. So what can we do? Number one, we can increase awareness and educate what's out there, what's being done on a national level. Here's some resources that you can use, like that preconception clinical guide. And then ask them back, like, do you even care about this issue? And if you do care about it, what's something that you can do in your clinic to address preconception care? And then we share that information across all of the attendees. So maybe it's like, I didn't think about that, but that's something easy I can do. For every single birth control prescription I write, you get a multivitamin. I never did that before, I ever thought about it, until I started to learn about the connection between the things that we study in public health. But for some reason, it's not trickling down into the clinical world. So we have a long way to go, but it was just the start. And now that I know it's IPE, and there's not a consortium. There is an interprofessional education collaborative that I can now follow to figure out ways to actually tailor it to the IPD.
So one of the things we're up against is that we have a society in which we have historically carved out, or we have these carve-outs for professions. This profession does this, this profession does this. And public health doesn't fit that. Public health is really the umbrella, okay? And partly we have to work on our elevator speech, about what it is we do in public health. But part of it is also that I think we are all starting to understand that we're up against problems, social problems, health problems, issues that are so much broader than any one profession. When you're talking about the multi-determined, the socially determined nature, who gives birth, under what conditions, and how healthy their babies are, you're really talking about all of these issues that are social, epidemiological in nature, in which they're not going to be solved by any one profession. And so people have to become transdisciplinary in their problem solutions. And it isn't just we're not just playing in the sandbox, we really have to think outside of these silos. And that's part of what public health has to offer, because we were always outside the silos, that we exist in that way. So I just really think we're positioned as a practice to really lead transdisciplinariness as a major problem solving set of activities in the 21st century, but we just gotta work on our elevator speech.
Yeah. I like your staircase example, which is about
bathroom.
No, good.
You can't go in there. One more staircase that runs up and down. Some of the feedback we got from the residents were, I've never been in a room with a pediatric resident or a man medicine resident, even though they all write their women. OB&T very rarely do blocks that we work together. We never have during rounds together. And this is the first time putting people together. And so we did our breakout group. It was 15 to 20 minutes in your specialty. And then everybody was mixed to really talk about and share how they would address pre-conception care, because it's weird. You usually end up on the same floor or one floor above each other, but unless you need a NICU console, we don't work together. And that's a problem. I think public health is the staircase to kind of start bridging that. And it takes time, but getting them actually come is huge.
They don't have advantage over
it. Right. And it takes.
So I'd like to give the opportunity for any other questions. We have a great discussion going. And I do want to say, with any absence of any hands, that this is really, I think, can be our banner year and really coming into ourselves as a profession. So yes, I am also a family medicine physician, but I was a public health practitioner first. And so with Dr. Adewale Chapman ascending to the presidency, someone who truly understands social, environmental, structural determinants of health, it is time for us as public health practitioners really to We have to lead the charge. We can leave from behind too. We've been doing that for, you know, about more than 100 years ago now. But we really need to lead the charge in all of these areas, and that the value added, what we bring to what the other health professions are doing, we need to create a clear understanding of that. And I don't feel that we always do that. So I'm not supposed to be giving, this is my elevator speech, sorry, but I just have to say that. So any further questions as we go on? And speaking of that, in light of that, we're all going to either early vote when we go home or we vote when we go home. Thank you. Any other questions today?
I just want to know, there's another, if you go to the ANC, you can get the ITAC.
Yes, I do.
There's a newer cross-cultural competency report that's a similar format, which is also very good. And selecting, you know, from those two reports, letting people know, this is kind of what we're trying to get across in this activity.
You're speaking about the cultural competency report between ANC and the ASPH?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so, and actually they were working on that long
ago.
That
came out. Okay, so
yeah.
ITAC came out in 2011, and I think the other one came out in 2012. But
yes.
They're both available, and they're both really useful. Because in public health, we've got the ASPH competencies, we've got the council linkages, we've got all these public health competencies, but both of those reports are about
merging
across health professions and public health professions. Yeah. It's a really good
resource. I was wondering if in Boston, where there's a dual program, if people are taking a different certification exam?
They do. I mean, I think it's really up to the individual. Almost everyone gets licensed as a social worker, and then it's optional to take the speed exam if you're interested. And doing that, there's the CHESS, the Certified Health Education Specialist. Any other students? I mean, so it's really, it's up to the individual.
That's interesting. I'm sorry. The MPH, I have to look at the curriculum, but the MPH person and MSW person can qualify to take the CHESS exam?
Oh, yeah. It depends on what you major in at the School of Public Health. So if you're in social behavioral sciences and you've met the requisite course need, you can easily meet the criteria for CHESS. And actually, a lot of our people do.
Or CPA.
I
just want to make another statement about being transdisciplinary. Even within public health, we have to do that. Because I have so many faculty saying, I'm an epidemiologist, and I will do this. And I'm a biostatistician.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's you social behavioral people who are going to do that. And I'm like, no, we're all part
of this. Yeah. I think dialogue, is the biggest thing, is to get in getting people. That is the first step. And learning what everybody does, but all and that's this class gives that opportunity as well. But within our own colleges, across our colleges.
And it's ironic, right, that we are teaching our students, but we're not doing it ourselves. Actually, our college engages in seed grants for our junior mid-level faculty to be interdisciplinary within the college to encourage that.
Yeah,
the
sounds like a pretty
strong.
And even you can think about, you know, from NIH multidisciplinary research, and, you know, I don't think people really know how to do that. You know, they say you need to do that, but I don't know if people really know how. I actually had a student doing sort of a project on how can we really do that in this project we're working on. So I think it's on many different levels and all over.
But there's some fields of organizational behavior and development that pertain to that, and we don't even read the business literature. Whatever it is, but it's relevant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is one thing our dual practitioners, our MDM PhDs, can really teach us about, or our MSWM PhDs can teach us about. They embody within themselves dual professionalism, so they know how to pull on two different, they're bigger than perspectives, but professional identities, professional skill sets, professional competencies. So I think the field needs to pay a lot more attention to dual professionalism. And it will learn a lot about how to do transdisciplinary interprofessional work, because these are leaders.
Yeah. Well, then, like my training, I had clinical, I'm a big health behavioral background, PhD, and I had clinical psychologists, social psychologists, a few public health people, and my mentor was a social worker.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's hard to explain that to people.
But it was effective, right?
Just, I will say one of the advantages of this is my mentor that I do my project with, she's a nurse, she's a PhD nurse, and my other faculty member is an MD in the family practice. And so having them teach me is really beneficial, even though Dr. Littleton, who I go to is my advisor for the course, because she was in the public health, really the project was developed with nursing and medicine faculty.
And I found this is important to keep in mind the stakeholders' motivation and what, how to make it relevant to them. So in surgical fields, like OB, I don't think we've moved as far as we can in women's health, period, because there's a competing interest, right? So my residents and even my faculty in the Department of OB-GYN do not necessarily see the value in manuscripts and publications and research, because they get rewarded on their OR time. Right? Okay. If you bill, if you're in the OR, we generate more income for the faculty as well as the department through how much time you're in clinic and in operating room. So unless you buy your time out, the FTE and the base salary that you have as an academic physician, you make much more than that on how much you bill. Mm-hmm. And so through public health, including the maternal child health consultation that we started, I started doing kind of these discussions on the role of research, why it's important, and why it's important to have public health people around the clinic, or epidemiologists, or biostatisticians. My epidemiologists have never been in an operating room. They've never been behind the scenes. They have no clue of what's going on in the real world, and that's what our OB-GYN partners can bring. Ask us the questions that you know how to answer to you. Pose the research question, we will do the design, we need you to help with recruitment. We're happy to put you in. They're like, we don't really care about papers, just put us last. So I have even on my slide at the end, they're like, we don't care about that stuff, so you can put us on there. Congratulations on the ASCAP and APHA. But how do you work together, and how do you speak a language that will be valued to them? So it was, you don't have to do all this writing, we will do it. But you're behind the scenes, you know what the issues are. Pose the research questions, and we'll work collectively to get the answers, because that's what you really want. And that's been, it's been a journey that I think we've only taken 3 steps forward on, but it's moving in the right direction, and it's going to take time. And I think you're right, those dual degrees are important because I can speak both languages, but also I recognize they're two completely different reward systems, two completely different motivating factors for the work that we do. So how do you find it?
Yeah. Right. Well, and depending on what it's because in my institution, you need to do everything. You need to do the papers and the practice. But they don't care how many patients you're seeing. They do care how many patients you're seeing in the practice plan or how much you're assigned. But they also care if you want to be promoted, how many papers. They know you can't be in the middle of a paper. You need to be the first one. So it just,
Well, and that mirrors the student experience too, because they love being out in the community and talking to the community and doing assessment and doing the project. But the didactic piece, which is a public health and park course, so there is, you know, we want them to learn about planning and assessment and evaluation, you know, it's very researchy. And they're like, well, I'll never do that. It's not important. So, it's a challenge. How can we do that? And this is Dr. Bill Florence, who's been in charge. I mean, you've been there since the Kellogg days. Yeah. So he's a family dog, and he leads up our curriculum committee. So I don't know if you have anything you want to weigh in on, Joe.
Sorry.
Well, certainly, in professional education is clearly a future need for everybody, all the different professions. Learning how to play together in the sandbox, not just to play together, parallel play, which we're doing a lot of right now, but really to play together to get things accomplished, to improve the health of the people. You know, having a bunch of doctors work better together is good, but until you get the social workers involved and the nurses involved and the community things working together to improve that woman's health. You as a doctor, your ability to stop that woman smoking is just about none. 2%. 2%. And so, you know, somebody else is going to have to bring their armamentarium to the table. So you identify those things. Yeah, you need to improve the health. You know, you're going to be doing those C-sections, but these other people are going to be making, you know, the patient healthier for you. You know, so you've got to play together as a team, learning how to do that. The population health thing is going to hit us as doctors right in the face, because we will be paid by our performance, not by the individual patients, but by our patient populations. And so understanding all this public health stuff that you've shoved under the table is now going to be right at the forefront. You know, we got to learn how to do this stuff. We got to know how to look at population things, how to look at trending things, how to have all these clear objectives and monitors in place, and we got to do that.
I want to second that, because I think that's such an important issue. We have now a really critical moment, as you were saying, with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act and with the new 2020 and the prevention strategy. There's just so many opportunities for us to tell a different story about what it is that we do in public health and why it's so central that that everybody have an appreciation for. Not every clinician has to do population health. I don't think that your professional training means that. I think what it means is, though, that you have enough people within those disciplines who understand it to be able to meaningfully infuse it into each profession and have enough capacity to play. I'm all for getting out of the box and in different ways of approaching these issues. So I agree with you, and I think it is a crucial moment, and I hope that people will go home. One last comment from the day is that I'm 20 years short, and I thank you for your wishes, and I would ask that you just continue to pray for everyone there, that you have any faith, and that it's a blessing. Our peer is gone, our boardwalk is gone, but we are still strong, and so just again, when we're talking about voting, you know, I don't want to be political, but please vote. And possibly, you know, just think about
not having to be much.